One of the things I think in Montana that's unique this year regarding elections is all the independent candidates running for office. They're on both houses, House District 1, the west side, House District 2, the east side, of course, in the Senate as well. There's some running, too, in our Montana legislature as independents. How do you find that? How do you feel about that? It's interesting, right? But what does independence mean? We're going to ask an independent candidate about that today here, because in studio is Michael Eisenhower, medical doctor, running for House District 2. That's the Eastern Congressional District, seat now held by Congressman Troy Downing. So, what are your views on illegal immigration, the Iraq War? How about the president's agenda, endorsed by some former Democratic personnel like Senator John Tester? How does that impact the race? Find out today in studio. Dr. Michael Eisenhower, independent candidate, House District 2, today on Voice. Let's get into today's program. Just as I mentioned, today's political atmosphere on the far right and on the far left, it's pretty hot, right? There are a lot of people that are examining, do I fit there or do I fit over here? What about all this gray area in the middle? That's kind of where I'm at. Who's representing that? And I think that's an interesting question for people and probably indicative of today's politics. Let's welcome our guest here. It's Michael, Dr. Michael Eisenhower. Oh, yeah, let me just there. Thank you, Cody. Candidate, House District 2. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Tom. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here with you today.
I'm really glad you're here because we don't... this independent candidacy, I think, is just, it's fascinating. And like as we chatted a little bit before here, too, people are trying to put you in one box here or one box there as well. And you know, it's just natural. I'm going to do that as well. Are you in a box that I don't fit in? How do I process all that? But who are you? And why are you running as an independent?
Well, I'm running as an independent because that's really who I am. And that's what I believe in. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have never been the kind of guy who voted a straight party ticket on either side. I believe in advanced citizenship. I'd like to think I'm smart enough that I spend the time to read about individual candidates and then vote for a person who I align with and who agrees with my set of core values the closest. And sometimes that's on the left side, sometimes that's on the right side. But when I'm out talking to Montanans, I'm really finding that the majority of Montanans are kind of like what you expressed a second ago. They're somewhere in the middle. They're not on the fringe element of the far left. They're not on the fringe element of the far right.
Politics is not a religion to us.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Rather, they're closer to somewhere in the middle. And I believe this way about that and this way about that. But it's not worth fighting over the way it happens in Congress so often. You know, in Montana, we work with our neighbors. We protect our neighbors. If neighbor's stuck in the snowdrift, you get out your truck and you go pull them out of the ditch. We take care of each other, okay? And so the vitriol and the animosity in Washington has just gotten out of control where it's getting in the way of representative government. It's getting in the way of doing what's best for the average American and for the average Montanan. There's got to be a better way to do this.
A lot of things to kind of peel into there. I want to thank you for your service. 24 years in the military as a cardiologist as well. Talk about that experience. Talk about, and one question I ask frequently, maybe in this answer you can fold that in here, is what was your calling? What is your calling nowadays to public service like that?
Well, 24 years in the military.
Thank you.
I learned very early as a young officer, as a buck lieutenant, that... it's not okay to just simply complain about something unless you're willing to be part of the solution, okay? And that's really why I'm running for office right now, is because I think I have something to offer, and I would rather be part of the solution than be part of the problem, okay? So I was sitting up in elk camp up on a national forest this last fall, watching the fight over the One Big Beautiful Bill, watching the fight over the premium tax credits and the cuts for the Affordable Care Act, and thinking about what does that do to the individual Montana, and what does that do to rural health care in Montana, which, of course, is near and dear to me as a cardiologist.
We'll certainly get into it. Yeah, it's an important issue.
Yeah. And so it kind of became instinctive to me that if something's broken, you try to contribute towards making it better for all rather than just sit back and throw tomatoes from the back of the room. And so I was kind of in a different phase of my life, and I had the opportunity to say, okay, well, maybe I can raise my hand, serve my country again, serve my state in a better way, and try to contribute to solving this dilemma, which is affecting us every day, everything from kitchen issues to economic issues to agricultural issues to now military issues back in the Middle East. I think there's just a more open and a more congenial way to do this that's more representative of what Montanans believe.
I think it's easy to say ideologically we're far right and far left, and there's a lot of people in the middle, so to speak, seeking solutions. Getting those solutions across the table is another aspect of this as well. How do you process this, Michael?
Yeah. Well, I've been asked repeatedly, what are you going to go in and do on day one?
Yeah.
You win, what are your... And my answer to that, believe it or not, is not a whole lot of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I, as an independent candidate, it would be an absolute mistake for me to walk in on day one and say, here's my five bills that I've already drafted, and I've got big shoulders, and you have, you know... One guy out of 435, ping, you're off the island and you've lost all credibility. My plan would be to get there and spend the first week, the first month, doing nothing but building relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the relationship piece that's broken right now. Talk to and find four or five people who are leftward leaning but who are more moderate. Find five or six people who are on the right side who are more rightward but yet moderate. Work together with that group. Take the sharp edges off any particular issue. You know, neither side is going to get 100%. But you can find a congenial solution to nearly everything that we need to do that satisfies the need of the majority in terms of the majority of the population, not majority of a party. And I think there's an appetite for that. I think there's a desire for that. We found that during our petition drive, which I'm sure we'll get to here in a little bit. I think there's a better way to do this. You know, compromise doesn't have to be a four-letter word.
I know, we're just letting that hang out there, aren't we? We're looking at each other. It doesn't. But compromise, I've heard conservatives, and I believe that. I think conservatives are asked to compromise way more than Democrats when it comes to policies. And I think that's why we've seen our country drift more and more to some of those ideals. So compromise is not always 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see conservatives who are going, we've compromised, and right now are, especially on some of these social issues, our society is struggling over that. How do you bring that all together? I mean, compromising, is it just create something nobody likes and then call that a solution or?
Because governing isn't throwing a dart into the dartboard and seeing where it lands. It really isn't.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, kind of my approach to this to the legislative process will be somewhat closer to what the medical decision making process as well. Okay, so let's say you have an issue. You have signs or symptoms. You're sick. Okay, what a doctor will do is take that and then start researching the issue and being open to different sides and listening and considering what we would call a differential diagnosis. And then not until step three would he make a recommendation of what we would do. Okay, that's not a lot different than the legislative process of being willing to listen and being willing to consider, well, the polls or the last constitutional referendum or initiative was this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the majority of Montanans on this, okay? And then make a decision, but then what's missing so often is step four of going back and reevaluating and how did that diagnosis work? How is that treatment working? Well, how is our laws working? Does the legislation need to be revised? Are there things we need to do? I don't see that part happening so much. I see the kind of dogmatic approach of wait, being told what to do by your party boss. Okay, let's go do it. And that doesn't link back to what's best for Montana or Montanans.
Michael Eisenhower with us, Dr. Michael Eisenhower, again, and a Bronze Star recipient as well for your overseas deployment in Baghdad in 2009. I really appreciate that. And I think we learn an awful lot about ourselves, our fellow countrymen, and our country in examining military service. What's your takeaway?
Well, the takeaway from that is actually there's a surprising number of veterans who are running for office across the country this year. And I've been asked repeatedly, why are veterans so motivated to do this? And some of it comes back to what I said before, is if we see a breach and a gap or if we see a problem, we'll be willing to step in. Mm-hmm. But I swore an oath to this country, okay? And I believe in our country. And I think our country can find a new way of doing this to get rid of all this animosity and vitriol. I'm very proud of my service. I enjoyed my time over in Baghdad. It was a fascinating gig. I wasn't in combat. I was a non-combatant, being a medical guy.
I
carried a Geneva Conventions card that protected me, so to speak. But it was also a fascinating job because I found myself being the number two doctor in the theater of war and the chief of clinical operations for the theater of war. So I was able to see the battle from day to day and personal physician to the generals and had access to things that I ordinarily would not have access to. And so it was had an office in the American Embassy, an office over in Saddam's palace, interacted with the Iraqi Ministry of Health, found myself in the equivalent of the Iraqi White House. Those experiences gave me the confidence to say, hey, you know, there is something I can contribute to this. Even at that kind of national geopolitical level, when I'm talking to the Iraqi Ministry of Health about how we really don't have a way to test donated blood for swine flu, which was happening at the time, I find myself briefing the vice chief of the staff of the Army because I was the suicide prevention officer in the theater of war. So these kinds of issues gave me the confidence that, yeah, I can do something like this.
I appreciate that. And you've seen the cost of war, and I don't mean the budget cost of it, the personal price of war. You've seen it close. And being military 24 years, I think you understand the need for national security. And this is philosophical, but I want to lean on your experience there. Is the cost of freedom worth the price?
Well, unequivocally, yes. Okay. And every one of the volunteer servicemen and women believe that as well. Yeah. Okay. Or else we wouldn't be there. Okay. We believe in the mission. We believe in doing what's right. We believe in standing up for the morals and ideals and values of the United States, of America. And that's true both inside the country and outside the country. But yeah, war has a distinct cost. I mean, I was an intermediate Purple Heart approval authority. I saw some of these things. And there's a tremendous cost to the individual. And it does not stop when you leave the theater. We've already talked about suicide just a little bit, but it talks on veterans' health care issues after they come home. And Montana has second highest per capita veteran of any other state in the country. And so these issues don't just stop at the border. Okay, these soldiers deserve our attention, they deserve our support, and they deserve our care long term.
Dr. Michael Eisenhower, we're going to take a break and come on back with more. Eisenhower, it's Eisenhower it's all spelled out, EisenhowerForCongress.com. Just got a message today from the Secretary of State's office. Your name was on it, Michael.
Hooah.
Yeah, you are officially now qualified for the ballot. So we'll be seeing Dr. Michael Eisenhower's name in November. Dr. Michael Eisenhower is with us here. Again, a military veteran, a cardiologist, and a candidate. An independent candidate for House District 2, a seat currently owned by or occupied by Montana's Troy Downing. Michael, I appreciate you coming in as well. I want to get in some issues. We got a couple of questions here, and we'll get to that too. So stand by, callers. But as a cardiologist, right, what are your solutions for healthcare?
Yeah, well, rural healthcare is obviously near and dear to my heart, okay? And it's really easy. Being a cardiologist, it's kind of comes natural to me. If you're out there in the field, let's say you're up in Plentywood or Glendive or a more remote location and you have a heart attack, okay, would you rather go to your local rural healthcare facility and get your treatment started and get an EKG and get blood thinners started and call in a helicopter to come get you down to me in Great Falls or another interventional guy who does balloons and stents? Or would you rather hop in your car for 4 or 5 hours with your heart attack ongoing and hope you make it? Mm-hmm. Okay. So rural healthcare is critical to our state. It's jeopardized right now, particularly because of the efforts to increase the worker requirements and the cutback on the Medicaid expansion, the affordable tax credits. Without those revenue streams, our rural healthcare clinics are going to be in financial jeopardy. And even if they manage to keep the doors open, they may not be able to keep all their service lines open. They may have to close an emergency department. And that's kind of that's defeating care for our public. I've had the ability as a cardiologist to go out and go to and actually work and take cardiology out to Haver and to Chester and to Shelby and to Shoto and Conrad and even into our capital city in Helena. I went as a traveling cardiologist, and it's very enlightening to get boots on the ground and arrive there, for example, in Chester and have one guy grab you by the collar and say, "Oh, good, you're here. I've got questions. I need your help." Even though it's not a cardiac, I need help because that PA is out there by himself.
Yeah.
Okay. And so having a recognition and a realization of those kinds of issues, I think are important.
The solution to that, though, I mean, we just can't keep throwing money at it. We're $37 trillion in debt.
Yep.
We look at Obamacare. They expanded it. And then they reinstated the expansion going forward. And now it seems like there are some people who are, you know, paying their own way, but many, many more people who have found themselves. And that's the, you know, the rising cost of healthcare, which is an issue as well. So, I mean, do we end up as a country that has to subsidize healthcare, or how do we get that straightened out?
Yeah. And our healthcare process right now is broken, and there is some corruption going on, and there is some greed going on. And when you start realizing that more than 50 cents of every healthcare dollar doesn't go towards the actual delivery of healthcare, it's not paying for immunizations, it's not paying for blood tests or doctor visits or x-rays or even surgical procedures. It's paying towards administrative overhead. It's paying pharmacy benefit managers.
Liability. It's paying liability. It's a huge thing.
My liability insurance as a cardiologist is upwards north of $30,000 a year just for my insurance, okay, which sometimes is covered by employers and sometimes not if you're in private practice. But the insurance companies are also making record profits, okay? So the healthcare industry needs to be reformed. It needs to kind of be broken down. There are ways to be able to modify it and modernize the healthcare system. The Affordable Care Act was a great thing for a lot of people who had no insurance. It got rid of the pre-existing conditions. It made certain primary preventive care issues automatically paid for, regardless of your insurance company or your covering entity. But it's 20 years old. It's time to kind of modify it and make it better. Take it to the next generation.
And it's three times the cost of what they said it would be as well.
Yeah.
So that's another issue.
Some of that is because of that administrative structure that was put in and the regulations and pre-authorizations and everything else.
And I appreciate that. And your experience, it helps because this is a long track. This is a long game in trying to fix healthcare in the country. And so there are going to be steps, step by step, so to speak. Let's take some phone calls before we get into our next break here, before we get kind of lined up here. Skip listening in Hamilton on KLYQ. Good morning, Skip. You're on the air here with Dr. Michael Eisenhower.
Oh, thank you, Tom. And thank you, sir, for coming on today. And thank you for your service to our country. And in your soliloquies about different subjects, you remind me of somebody who's run for office a lot, who had a fine military career, and also is a physician, a surgeon, and that's a friend of mine for years is Dr. Al Olszewski. I don't know if you know him, but he always ran as a Republican, and the way that you attack a subject, you line out the details and the cliff notes. And I'm hoping that in this election process, I hope that you can at least, because the Republican machine is so intense, especially in the eastern part of the state, at least you'll be able to put issues on the table to make sure that whoever is elected has got to address them in the future for the state of Montana in Washington, D.C. And so could you give us some ideas of other issues that you would challenge Troy about, for instance, if you were in a debate, other issues that are going to affect Montana that you as a representative would be able to do a better job at, or at least maybe even have a more depth of knowledge about an issue than, for instance, Troy would. Touch on a couple other issues. I sure would appreciate it, and thank you very much for coming on, and thank you, Tom.
Skip, I appreciate the call. So why vote for Michael Eisenhower?
Well, because Mike's ready to listen. He's ready to listen to Montanans and hear what's important to them and have an open mind, because those people who take the time to reach out and talk to you oftentimes will give you the solution. They will tell you, hey, it would work better if we did this. It would work better if we actually worked more on antitrust issues against those seed suppliers that used to be 40 companies and it's now down to 4. It would work better if we could expand our export markets, which the tariffs have gotten in the way of doing. And so in the ag community in particular, the input costs are up, the output costs are down, and they're getting squeezed, and it's threatening the family farm. And so I'm not going to speak ill of Representative Downing, okay? But what I do feel is that he's kind of towing the party line. He's doing what the larger party is telling him to do, and that's maybe representing the East Coast or the West Coast or the intellectual elites, and maybe not what's best for Montana. So it's things like he has said that it's okay to import 80,000 metric tons of beef, which hurts our ranchers. He has not really been out in favor of mandatory country of origin labeling. There are health care issues, there are Medicare issues, there's housing affordability issues, there's all sorts of other issues where I think that discussion can take place.
Can an independent really stay independent in Washington, D.C.? Today we asked Dr. Michael Eisenhower about his campaign, also other issues we're going to get into here today. And Dr. Eisenhower from Great Falls, cardiologist, military career, 24 years, Bronze Star following overseas deployment in Baghdad, and now has thrown his hat in the ring as an independent for House District 2, and that is the Eastern Congressional District. It is a full ticket there. Brian Miller actually is the Democrat who won the primary on the Democratic side. Patrick McCracken is a Libertarian on the ballot, and Troy Downing is the incumbent and a Republican. And Michael Eisenhower joins us in studio here. Michael, that's a pretty full ticket, isn't it? How do you win this race?
It raises challenges.
Yeah.
It really does. Well, what we're finding is that there really is an appetite for something different. We're finding that there are some disenfranchised Democratic voters and there's some disenfranchised Republican voters. And I personally think with that independent center, that independent gathering, that moderate from both sides, that there is a pathway ahead. I'm not doing this as a vanity project. I'm doing this because I think there's a bona fide chance to do this. And it's changed over the last 4 years or over the last 10 years. I think that tracks what's happening across the country. The same is happening in Montana and the same is happening in eastern Montana, that there's an openness to doing this. And so, I'm looking forward to having this be a competitive process.
We'll take a call now, and then we'll get onto some other issues here as well. Bill in East Helena, listening on KCAP. It's good to have you along, Bill. Thanks. You're on the air here with a candidate, Dr. Michael Eisenhower.
Well, thank you, Tom, for taking my call, and Dr. Eisenhower. I have a couple of questions for you. First, I'm curious as to your upbringing. Where about in Montana do you hail from? My second one is, how do you feel about data centers? I think we need to get on top of it. If we don't, the Chinese will, and that's not good for anybody. And the third one, I appreciate your support for rural hospitals. My daughter works at the lab in the hospital down in a small town of Forsyth, Montana. And so I appreciate that. And other independents that I've talked to, I had one of them come right out and say, I'm ashamed of the Democrat Party, so I became an independent. Is that the case? Because the Democrat Party did such a left turn that it's scaring away a lot of people with common sense. And I'm just curious about the data centers, your upbringing, and what made you an independent.
Yeah.
Thank you, and have a good day. I'll listen to you on the radio. Thank you.
Good stuff, Bill. Thank you for those questions.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate those questions. So I'll go very rapid fire through this. I was raised, went to high school in the extreme northwest corner of the panhandle of Nebraska. So I've always kind of considered myself a Midwestern guy. But then I went to medical school in Washington, D.C., and residency at Walter Reed. And then, you know, there is no Army base in Nebraska. There is no Army base in Montana or Wyoming. And certainly not big enough to have a major hospital where I needed to be with my chosen profession.
Yeah.
So moved all over the country. You know, spent time in El Paso, St. Louis, Washington, D.C., a year in South Korea, a couple of tours up in Seattle, Tacoma, 8 years in El Paso, and then some time over in Baghdad. After retirement, I moved to Wyoming for 2 or 3 years and worked in Casper as a cardiologist. And then in 2015, took a job up at Benefis in Great Falls. And so I've been in Great Falls now for 10 years, 11 years. You know, there's not a lot of geographic or philosophic difference between Montana and Wyoming and kind of the panhandle of Nebraska. That's really what felt like home to me. And so I'm proud to be here now. Second question on the data centers. Bill, I just kind of point you towards my website. I put a section there on data centers. And I've obviously been asked this question a lot, to include both by the AFL-CIO, but by other interested parties and even the competitors. There's really five pillars to my approach to data centers, which again fits this medical process. One is mandatory closed loop cooling, and that can be done very, very efficiently and not consume water. Mm-hmm. Second is energy and power. They need to be able to provide their own energy, have a plan to purchase it. If that means they need to build transmission lines, that's what they do. And not limited to coal. It could be gas-fired. It could even be small modular nuclear reactor. It could be solar wind. But they need to provide their own power. That's how Montanans are protected against potential rate increases. And it's not just how much power they need on day one. It's how much power they may need 5 or 10 years from now, anticipating growth. That needs to be accounted for up front. Third pillar is that if there's facilities built in Montana, I think Montana labor ought to be involved in that process. Okay. That seems only right. That seems only fair. The fourth pillar is also, though, there needs to be safeguards. There needs to be rules of engagement, guardrails. Okay. They need to provide for their own waste management. They need to provide for their own sewer. They need to provide roads. What does the community need for the infrastructure? Maybe a community needs to have their wastewater management system completely replaced. Okay. And so this is one way that the community can afford to do that, because they benefit from that tax basis. So it allows a process where you can kind of have a give and a take, and hey, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? So that both parties benefit from the process. To cut straight to it, I'm not in favor of a mandate either for or against, either from the federal or the state level. I'm a process guy. I think you're gathering that being this independent. The fifth pillar, though, is very important, and that's local control. I think it's perfectly appropriate what's happening in Yellowstone County with the petition drive. I think some communities will choose to be involved with this, and some communities will choose not to be, and that's perfectly fine. Again, I don't think there's a mandate pro or against.
Is it perfectly fine? Because I've got a lot of other things it goes so dang fast. But I spoke with a national expert who talked about the AI and the data center. And that if there are states out there, because I do believe, like Bill, that we need to have those. And I appreciate your approach there. And by the way, let me say, you guys, go to his website, EisenhowerForCongress.com. It is really well spelled out, all these issues here, Michael. And I appreciate the time that you put into that to get people to understand your issues about a lot of things there. And I think you will appreciate that if you go. So EisenhowerForCongress.com. The data centers, I worry that that if we don't have them, we do suffer competitively. And but if every state and every community out there is going to ban data centers, if they and they should have that choice, there should be some, like you say, some local control in there, then nobody's going to have them here. And this to this point, this national expert had said, you know, we need to have these. It may be a national security issue. And so is there some consideration for mandating that to a certain degree?
The country, we need AI data center. We need data centers. We need AI. Okay. We need it to support our military because that's becoming more and more advantageous. Right. Healthcare. Okay. Think of how, again, I mentioned the physician assistant out in, I'm making this up, but Tumbleweed, Montana, you know, if he can type in a set of signs and symptoms and have an AI system come back and say, hey, do this test, this test, this test, that's advantageous to him and to us, okay? So it can help with economic efficiencies, all sorts of things. So, yes, I do think it's a security issue. I think it's of national importance to be involved with it. The issue is the NIMBY issue, not in my backyard. Yeah, I agree it needs to be somewhere, but I don't want it here. I would challenge that there are some places that would welcome it for what it can bring to a community or to a region.
Yeah. I hope that's the case. And that whole bring your own power thing, they're putting a lot of weight on that. I hope that can be accomplished because I have some questions about that, but all those other things, the cooling system, and the labor regarding it, I think there's a place for that. Dr. Michael Eisenhower, again with us here. This is a tougher question about and Bill kind of hit on it, and I think you probably get that a lot as well. You kind of said earlier as we were chatting, people try to put you in a box. You know, you've been endorsed by Senator John Tester, well-known Democrat. You have some longtime Democrats in Montana working for you, but you know, you're not. You do get associated with the company you keep, but the question is, how do we know that you're independent, will stay independent, and not end up voting, like, I don't know, on the wrong side of the aisle for a lot of people?
Well, that is going to be my job during the next 4 months, is to earn the trust of Montanans that I am who I say I am, okay? So, let me just stay right up front and very directly. I don't plan on caucusing with either party, okay? Not 100% anyway.
Yeah.
There will be times that I talk with the Democrats over an issue and maybe agree with them. There will be times on the Republican side I agree with them, okay? That's part of being bipartisan. That's part of being open-minded. That's part of making my own decision rather than somebody else telling me what to do. Now, in terms of endorsements, I am very proud. Yes, we've got hardcore Democrats that are endorsing us. We have the Independent Veterans of America, which is a national independent organization endorsing us. Gary Buchanan, who ran as an independent 4 years ago, is endorsing us. Tomorrow, I'm very pleased to announce that we will have an endorsement from Governor Roscoe, who is the chairman of the Republican National Committee, for crying out loud. And so we are talking with Democrats. We are talking with Republicans. We are getting women to endorse. We are getting men to endorse. We are getting veterans to endorse. And we're having an exceedingly, well, first of all, that part's fun, okay? But we're having pretty good luck. We're being received positively. I'm accountable to you guys. I'm accountable to the voters. If I get in there and you don't like what I'm doing, 2 years goes by awfully, awfully fast. Throw me out, okay? I've got 4 months to earn their trust.
I want to say I really appreciate that, too, because I know, having some political experience, that there are some who run on the independent ticket because they can't win as a Democrat in the state of Montana. I don't feel that is you, Michael.
Good.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah.
Okay. And that goes back to sitting up in elk camp. There's got to be a better way to do this. There is no real third party pathway. Okay. And so the independent pathway to me came a natural fit, but it ain't easy.
I know that.
And the duopoly that we have even in Helena, you know, with this signature threshold and the process, you know, there are tremendous hurdles for an average mechanic, construction, you know, anything, name your profession, XYZ. the hurdles to getting in without having party backing from day one are significant.
Thank you. It goes so fast, Michael. I appreciate you coming in here. We've only got like 2 minutes left here as well.
This has been fun, Tom. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad. And people do need to hear and express and be patient, but also work towards solutions. And I think a lot of people in Congress are trying to do that. I really do, for the vast majority. Do you have anything that you want to make sure people know about you, Michael, that – you know, because we only got like a couple minutes left. I don't want to ask the question, what's a Democrat? What's a Republican in your mind? What are people saying on the trail? Let's just go right there.
Well, what I find is when I get in front of people and I actually talk to them and I meet face to face like I am with you today, generally people can discover pretty quickly that I'm a real guy. I'm authentic. I mean what I say. I say what I mean. Okay. I want to be part of the solution rather than be part of the problem. Whether that's a veteran, whether that's a farmer, whether that's a salesperson, you know, it's been across the board, okay? And so it is much more difficult to do that over the telephone. And so a lot of this campaign will be, you know, face-to-face, getting out there to the rural communities, making a presence. It's all about kind of, this is who I am, and yes, I exist, but this is what I'm saying, and then thank them for their time because they're going to say something to me too. I'm still in eyes open and ears open mode. I'm still learning, and that's an exciting part of this.
Well, congratulations again. You did just get certified. At least the announcement came from the Secretary of State's office. So in earnest, I guess the campaign is underway here. How do we get a hold of Michael? Where do we see you at now?
Well, we're hitting the road, right now the phase of the campaign, we've moved from signatures to you know, we're building a foundation right now. So we're trying to get out there and get some face recognition, get some name recognition. So thanks again for the invitation here today. Then going to hit the road, we've got some little things that we're going to do and start driving and meeting people and getting to every county and every community and shaking the hands of good hardworking Montanans and hopefully earning their trust. So trust me, you're going to see me more out there.
And those are the people that our politicians serve, right?
Right.
Yeah, public service.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they listen and they get the feedback and they answer their phone calls and they do town halls and they're responsive. That's what I want to do.
Good luck on the trail. And I appreciate you throwing your hat in the ring.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Michael Eisenhower, once again, it is EisenhowerForCongress.com. You guys have a dang good day.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.